about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, in all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that I might have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen.
Amen. Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. We have Chelsea from Pergosi.
Hello, everyone. I am Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chelsea.
My sobriety date is July 28th, 2018. I'll have 6 years this July, God willing.
Right on.
Thank you. Let's see. I have a sponsor. She knows that. She is my sponsor. I also sponsor a few women. And let's see. My home group. I've admittedly been slacking on going to my home group, but it is the women's meeting in Pergosi. Girls' Night Out. It's really good if you've ever want to head out that way. I guess I could start with what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Growing up, I grew up in a rather, I don't want to say normal family. It was a little bit abnormal, honestly. But, my parents have always been married. They've always been together. They're really great, loving family, big loving family. My mom's one of six. My dad's one of five. We always get together for all the holidays. It was full of love. I guess what set my childhood apart, or what I thought set my childhood apart, is my family came from like a church that was considered a cult, and I was raised with like the thoughts of God was, if something bad happened, it was because I like sinned. Like if I sinned, then something bad happened. It could be anywhere from somebody getting sick to just like I was always scared. I remember every night praying like for all my sins, like because I was just terrified that I was going to go to hell. That's the type of like upbringing I had, and that might sound like the regular like church upbringing, but the way that this church that my parents had gone to, it was very much like you couldn't have an air conditioner. You couldn't have TV, you couldn't fly, you couldn't even own a house, you couldn't own a car. It was very much, it was odd. So that's kind of where like my beliefs formed. My parents did leave that church, but there was still like some lingering fear that was always taught in my childhood. I was just always scared. I was a scared kid. But other than that, to be honest, that did kind of breed some sort of separatedness from the rest of the world, to be honest. The way that I thought was very different. I went to public school, so I was on the outside always. And as far as I could remember, I was a very, like, isolating type of person, like, in my mind, right? Like, I was not a part of. I'm not like them. I am this. It was a very negative self-talk from a young age. I always had anxiety. There was always this like hunger for more, that could never be satisfied. I grew up in a rather like, I don't know how to describe it, but I guess rather strict home, and my parents were like, you're not allowed to drink, like you can't drink, you're gonna become an alcoholic. My mom would always say that, like, you've got alcoholism in your family, like your uncle is an alcoholic, yada yada yada. And so I avoided it until like I was 14, and that was my very first experience with alcohol, and I remember it very vividly. My very first time drinking, actually, was with a bunch of high school people who they were considered cool. And I was like, I feel like this is important only because of a part of and the people pleasing that kind of comes in with all of our isms, I feel like, or my experience particularly. But These cool people in school invited me to hang out, and I went and I drank and I pretended to be drunk. That was because I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted that. And I do remember feeling a little bit buzzed. I say that because there was like this character I was playing. I was a chameleon. I will be whatever you want me to be. Type of mentality that I had, I guess. And then I can tell you the second time I drank, because I liked the feeling that I had from the first time, and I drank on an empty stomach, and I had that feeling that they talk about in the big book, that sigh of relief. Like when you take that first drink, it's like, thank God, you know, like my brain shut off. I can escape my brain of the running, like torturing, berating myself, comparing myself, judging others. Like it goes on and on and on and on. And I took a drink and I was like, oh, I can finally just be. That's how it felt. Like I was like, oh. And I remember I had so much fun that night and I didn't remember a single thing. I just knew that when I drank, I could be whatever I wanted to be without my head berating me. If that makes sense. Like I could be and not like torture myself after about the interaction. Like I do that sometimes to this day. I'll have like a social interaction and like tear myself apart after. Like, what if they thought this? And oh my gosh, what if they think this about me? It's torture. But I remember that. I remember it being so fun, and I felt like I could finally be myself. That's what I thought, that I was finally being myself when I drank. And from that moment, I always wanted to drink. I would find any way possible to get down to Northeast Philly, Mayfair, drink in an alleyway with some older cousins of mine, and we would just get drunk every weekend. I remember that was my sole focus. It was like I was like head down, just get through school, just get to the weekend. And it was the only thing I thought about. Anything that came in between me and the drink, I was extremely just like rude, selfish. Like if you got between me and the drink, you didn't matter to me. It was like, please get out of the way. I don't care what I have to do to you to get to the drink. I don't care. I want to drink. It was, you know, I put my parents through hell. I lied and lied and lied. And actually, eventually, this is what's so funny. Like, at one point, the lying didn't really work anymore, right? So I got arrested and, I should say citated for underage drinking. And that scared me a little. Not enough. And at that point, I had realized, wow, it's actually better to tell the truth. So then I just thought, I'll just tell my mom when I'm going to drink. So that way it wasn't like I'm not lying to them anymore, and it doesn't look like drinking's the problem, right? Like if I tell them the truth, it's fine. I don't know if that makes sense to any of you guys, but for me it was like, oh, okay, I don't have to fully lie. Like it was kind of just a form of protecting the drink, making it look okay, making it look acceptable. And, you know, I was still underage, and I was telling my mom, and my mom couldn't say anything because if she did, I would just put her through hell. I would still do what I wanted to do, so I really didn't give my parents much of a choice, honestly. And they did try their best. I know they did. I was pretty hard to, not control, but to just talk any type of sense into. I thought that they were trying to keep the drink away from me. Like I said, my parents were like, don't ever drink. Like, it's bad. Or my mom was like that. And once I did, I was like, why are they keeping this from me? Like, I don't trust them. There's nothing wrong with drinking. I'm having a great time. Why? Like, if they told me not to, why would I? I felt like they don't know what they're talking about. And I felt like my mom was sheltered due to the upbringing that I was brought up in. So anywho, that quickly got, it was fun. It was fun for a while, right? Like, it did what it needed to do. It cured whatever, I don't know, delusion I had about I'm myself now and I can finally have fun and this is the way life's supposed to be. And until it, you know, like they say, it wasn't fun anymore. You know, I had gone through several losses in my drinking spree. I lost like my grandmother, and then like a year later I lost my grandpa, and then within 6 months I lost my best friend to a drowning accident. And those were things that, like, at the time I swore, like, if somebody asked me why I drank, I would say I just lost so many people. Like, if, like, I'm so young to experience all this loss, because that's what people were telling me. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm going to use that. And I, you know, it was always like, I lost all these people, and I just, that's why I drank. It was never why, you know. My problem was always me. But the drink was what, like, I went to. Like, it was the only thing that I knew that could solve the problem at hand, right? Like, a feeling that I had, like, what was the solution? It was to drink. Like, I remember having about, like, 6 months sober after I had gotten citated for underage drinking, and I was, you know, going to church and everything, but not really part of church. I was just trying to find friends who didn't drink. And that the night that one of my really good friends died, I drank. I drank because that was the only thing I knew how to do. I was like, this feeling sucks, and I'm gonna drink. And I thought that was just normal. I remember it being like almost the very next thing I did right after finding out. I was like, how do I get down to Philly so that I can drink? Like, that's what I need. And it was just, how I survived. It really was. I remember, looking back, I was such a zombie. I never had, like, suicidal thoughts, but I didn't really desire to live either, if I'm being honest. I was just trying to get through each day. It was hard. It was very hard. And I made it hard on myself, I guess. But, there were several times I tried to get sober, and when I did, there was always something else that I did in place of it, right? The isms popped up. Like, oh, I removed the drink, and then I would be, like, head first into an eating disorder, or a boyfriend, or shopping. It was always, there was always something that, like, once I got rid of that, like, there was always something. To just get out of myself, to get out of my mind, to make myself feel better, even if it was just for a few seconds or a moment. And yeah, I guess to speed up to where my bottom was, I had a pretty high bottom, I'll be honest. I remember going to therapy throughout my years, and from 14 to the day I got sober, where I would go to therapy, and, you know, surely therapy would help me, but I wasn't going to, you know, give up drinking. And surely, like, going to a nutritionist for my eating disorder would help me, but I was still drinking. And, medication's going to help me, but, you know, I was still drinking. And it was like I was trying to do all the things. Like, I was working out, but, you know, that didn't work either. And then I was, like, headfirst into my church, and that didn't work either for me for a little bit, you know? Like, it wasn't until I had, like I said, I had a pretty high bottom. I went out with my friend. We went out to her boyfriend's friend's birthday party, and I said I wasn't gonna drink. And this is also a theme that I did. I am not gonna drink. I'm gonna be the designated driver, because that's the way that I held myself accountable to not drink. But then I'd always drink. You know, I've heard other people say this, and that's how I know I'm in the right place, honestly. And you know, I kind of lost my train of thought, honestly. I say I'm not gonna drink, I'll go with you guys. And I'm like 20 minutes in, and I have my first drink, and then my second drink, and then on and on it goes. And then I actually tell her to drop me off at a bar in Northeast Philly, which she didn't think anything of it. I mean, I really put her through the ringer as well in my drinking. I kind of just used her. But she dropped me off, and I got obliterated, and I woke up in a place that I didn't want to be, with somebody I didn't want to be with. And I was like, who am I? And, like, why can't I not drink? Like, why can't I not drink? And, you know, I just was like, I'm being this person, I'm doing these things, but that's not who I am, but it is who I am because I'm doing it. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone. Here I am doing all these things, but there's this other part of me that's like, that's not me, but I am what I do. Like, I did these things, and so therefore I am that person. And I could no longer hide from that. That, like, was open. My eyes were open. Like, I could no longer hide from the fact that, like, that's not who I am. That is who I am. I can't say that that's not who I am. I do that. I do those things. I use my friends. I get obliteratedly drunk. I sleep with these people. I do this. I do that. Like, that is who I am because that's what I'm doing. And I remember I was like, I'm not going to drink. You know, I made that solemn swear over and over again. And I remember scrolling on Instagram. And I say this because this is a huge part of my story. This is where God really, for me, just, like, showed up. I had relationships with God throughout my Christian journey as a Christian, but there were times where I really just was like, God doesn't exist, and if he does, he hates me, or it doesn't make sense as to why he would let this happen to me. I'm trying my best, and here, like, all these things are happening to me. I'm the victim, you know, the victim mindset that I have, that so life is happening to me, and I have no control, there's nothing I can do, type of thing. And so I was scrolling on Instagram, and I saw somebody that I went to high school with was, like, talking about how he's not drinking anymore. And this was somebody that was, like, a really hard partier. He was crazy. He was known to be crazy. And I honestly, to be honest with you, I've never even talked to him in high school. We were just friends on Instagram. And I remember messaging him, and I'm quite literally said, like, how do you do it? And he at the time was at an outpatient treatment center, and he was like, well, I've been going to this outpatient treatment center, and we do this meeting on Tuesdays. You want to go? And normally they don't let people unless they're friends or family, this particular treatment center, come unless you're friends or family. And they let me come on the Tuesday, and I sat there and I listened to other people talk about stuff that I didn't think people talked about. And this wasn't an AA meeting. It was affiliated with the treatment center. They didn't really call it AA. But that's where my journey started. And I took FMLA, and I did PHP for 2 weeks. And the funny part is when I started my journey, I didn't really think that I was an alcoholic. I just thought that I had a problem. And so I did this this outpatient treatment center for 4 months before I was, like, really feeling good. You know, I had felt, like, spiritually connected to God again in a way that I hadn't in a long time. I was getting honest. I was with people who were like-minded, who understood the things that were going on in my head, and it didn't sound crazy. Because when I talked to my other friends, they couldn't relate because they weren't alcoholics. You know, they were normal. They could pick up a drink and put it down. I remember a friend was like, why can't you just time out your drinks, Chels? Like, one drink an hour. And I remember trying, and I physically could not. I was like, I don't know how you guys drink one drink in an hour. Like, that's crazy to me. I was with these people that understood me, and so of course I kept coming back. And towards the end of that 4 months, I remember there was an alumni meeting, and this is also what leads me to AA. This is just my experience. I know it's not like other people's experience, but it's mine. It's my experience. So there was an alumni event that they had, and these two people showed up, and they were talking about how they went to AA, and you know, they invited my friend, and I had avoided all contact with these people because I know that it was my alcoholism not wanting to really commit to not drinking. Like, there was still a part of me, although I was doing it, that still didn't want to commit to, like, not drinking. And I had left before they could even talk to me. And that was an instance where, like, looking back, I know that that was God kind of being like, you need to go somewhere else. You need AA, essentially. And then I remember sitting in another inpatient meeting, and I was talking about, like, I don't know what I'm going to do after this. I need friends who don't drink. And lady was like, you should really try AA. And I said, what is AA? So mind you, 4 months into an inpatient treatment center, and somebody's like, you should go to AA. I don't know what AA is. Somebody says it's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, like, laugh because I was like, I'm not an alcoholic. Why would you even suggest that to me? So that's just, like, the delusion here is that, like, I've been in an inpatient treatment center for my drinking for 4 months. Somebody suggests I go to AA and I scoff because I'm not an alcoholic. Like, just the delusion going on in my mind was funny. But it was enough for me. I was like, maybe I should. And I remember my friend telling us that we should go to this AA meeting, and I didn't really want to, and I remember this vividly as well, because there still was this part of me that did want to go, but not really. It's this fight in, I think, early sobriety where, like, you know, we like what it feels like to be sober, but at the same time, like, I don't really want to commit to that. Like, it's scary. And I remember sitting on my couch, and my friend was like, I'm going to pick you up. And that was the only way I would have went to a meeting. And God knew that. And my friend picked me up, and we went. And up until that point, I had been, you know, reading a lot of spiritual literature and, like, really connected to God. I remember feeling really connected to God. And this, like, constant theme that my higher power was speaking to me, like, you know, let the miracle happen, or, you know, it was this repeated phrase of expect a miracle. I saw it everywhere. Everything I read said expect a miracle. And I walk into this meeting. I didn't know anything about it. Mind you, my friend picked me up and he took me to the place. And I walk in, and I'm like looking around at all these young people. I'm like, holy crap, there's a bunch of young people sober. That's, like, foreign to me. I didn't expect that, because I was surrounded by a bunch of young people drinking. Like, that was just what we did. So when I walk in, I sit down, and I remember looking up as the meeting started, and I saw a plaque that said expect a miracle. And I looked to my left and my right, and I saw a plaque to both sides that said expect a miracle, expect a miracle. And I was freaked out, because up until that point, I didn't know that was, like, a thing in AA, right? That they say, you know, stay long enough for the miracle. I didn't know about AA, right? Like, I didn't even know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. But here I am walking into this meeting with something that my higher power has been, you know, showing me. I think when our eyes are open, you see the things that God is putting in front of you to kind of, like, talk to you and lead you if you're listening, right? And I see these plaques, and I was freaked out, but I knew that I was in the right place. I knew enough that, like, I don't know why I'm in this AA meeting, but I know that I'm supposed to at least be here, because this is, it really, like, my higher power knew that I needed to see that in order to stay. Because I was that arrogant, that filled with ego, that I didn't want to admit that I was an alcoholic or that I needed that. And that's how I got there. Like, that was all God. The way that I got to that meeting, the way that I got to this inpatient, the way that the people that came into my life, that was God. Because he knew that he did for me, cheesy, what I couldn't do for myself. I truly, like, and I remember going, and I was moved. I remember getting the goosebumps and being like, whoa. Like, God, like, my higher power is real. That's crazy. And I didn't know what the steps meant. I had no idea. They were intimidating, for sure. I was like, this is kind of weird. And it was a few weeks before I returned back to that meeting. But I remember I did. And I raised my hand to get a sponsor. And I did. And to my memory, I dove into the work. Because I was sick of the way that my life was going. I remember, on my way to the first meeting at the inpatient place, I remember just, like, waging war with myself, like, wanting to go and not wanting to go, like I've said a million times, but being like, there's one thing. There was a thought that came, and that was another spiritual experience for me, right? Like, that's the thing about our experience with God. It's personal to us. You know, like, you know when God's speaking to you. You know when, like, a thought comes to you that's not your thought, you know? And I remember driving and getting a thought that was like, you just gotta do something different. Like, if I have to live the next 24 years of my life the way I've lived the first 24, like, I don't want to do it. Like, you have nothing to lose. Do something different. That became my motto. And I realized, like, drinking was the only thing that I had never not done. Like, I had these brief, like, months where I put it down, but it was never, I always knew that I was going to go back to it, you know, like, that was never, like, a permanent thing. And when I quit drinking, there was always good things that happened, right? I felt better, I had more energy, you know, I did feel more connected to God during those times, but I always picked back up, generally because I would get that time and I'd be like, maybe I can drink. Maybe I'm not as bad as I thought I was, right? Like, but I was, you know, and it did get progressively worse. And I can only say that because that's what was true for me. It did get progressively worse for me. The period between my binge drinking got shorter and shorter and shorter, you know, and it's all I cared about towards the end. And, you know, so when I went to AA, there was still this, like, battle of my ego happening and battle of, like, wanting to be sober and being scared about the seriousness of what I was saying, you know, or the, like, am I really not going to drink my whole life? Like, that was my best friend. That was, like, the thing that I always went to and I could always rely on, you know, like, I felt like I couldn't rely on God. So, like, drinking was always there. I couldn't rely on my parents, so drinking was always there. You know, like, that was my best friend. So there's always that push and pull there. But so when I dove into the steps, I just kept telling myself, just do something different. So there were these, like, feelings of, well, this feels like something I don't want to do. And then I was like, I got to do it. You know, I got to do something different. Like, this is something I would not normally do. Guess I have to do it. If I want something different out of my life, I have to do something different. And I can tell you right now, like, that motivation is hard for me today. So I know that in early sobriety, that was fully, like, God. Because it's harder to muster up that got to do something different energy later down the road in sobriety, honestly. And so I dove into the work. And the first time I did the 4-step, I guess I should back up. My relationship with God, like I said, was in and out. Like, I was in and out of the church. You know, I believed in God. I always had believed in a higher power. I couldn't really say what it was, but I knew that there was something out there because there had been instances where I was like, there's something out there. And I remember somebody said something in a meeting that was like, you need to stop driving the car. And you need to let God drive the car, and you got to sit in the passenger seat. And I remember being like, wow, I really do try to run the show. Like, I really think I know what I got to do. Like, God is not involved in any of my decisions. And that was, like, pretty profound for me. And I remember being like, all right, I'm gonna give God another shot. And I'm gonna forget everything I think I know about God. Like, everything that I had already assigned to God up until to that point in my life, like, that he's this or that, or this is how he functions, and this is how he loves, and this is it, da-da-da-da. I was like, I have to forget all of that and be willing to see God or experience God in a different way, because it's not what it was not working. And I remember at that point, that's when I felt all these things were happening, you know, like, I was going to these meetings and like, I would hear the thing that I needed to hear, or there was something that happened earlier in the day, and I would go to the meeting and somebody share, and I'd be like, that's crazy. It was idiosyncrasies, I guess, that were happening through the day, that I was just like, I was so, felt so connected. And, you know, first time I did my 4-step, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I did it with all my heart. You know, I tried. I really didn't think I harmed people. I was actually like, this is going to be hard. I don't think I've ever harmed anyone. Like, I thought that I had the most pure heart and, like, my intentions were always good. Like, there's no way I hurt anyone. And so that first one was a little bit, like, I remember the first inventory wasn't that moving for me as much as my sex ideals was. If I'm being brutally honest, I remember doing that with my sponsor and seeing that, like, I had a pattern. Like, I wasn't actually good-hearted. You know, like, I had an end game, an idea, and it wasn't, like, sexual. I want to make that clear. It was more of, like, I'm going to make this person like me because it makes me feel good. Or if I get this person, it adds to my worth. It was, like, that high. So I saw in my patterns that I was not actually nice. I was using people. And the way that I thought people used me, I was using other people, and I was like, oh my gosh, I remember feeling like, this is crazy. It's like looking in a mirror and like you're seeing all the mud on your face, but you thought you looked good. You know, like you're looking in the mirror and you're like, wow, like that's gross. That is so gross. And that's how I felt about myself. And I was finally seeing myself for who I was. And it wasn't a bad thing, right? It was finally like I could see the truth and therefore I can change now. I can be who I want to be, or a better version of myself, but also who God wants me to be, right? Like, I remember that. And I remember, you know, I didn't do, you know, early sobriety was a little, you know, funny for me. Like I said, I really battled with my ego. So I did all the easy amends first. I really actually didn't even do like 6 and 7. I never prayed for my defects or anything. Like I just thought that was whatever. Second time I went through the steps, which I'm one of those people that had to go through them several times, unfortunately, or fortunately, honestly, I don't know. Depends on how you look at it. When I did my second 4-step, it was thorough, and I saw a pattern that, like, the ugly truth, that's what the 4-step does. It just shows you the ugly truth about yourself. Like, I saw that, you know, I didn't like when people thought that they were better than me. But why did I think that they should be below me? That's the ego, right? Like, they're threatening my self-esteem. Like, if you think, like, the way, if somebody treated me like I was less than, I was like, how dare you? Ego, pride, resentment started. It actually had a lot to do with that. Like, if I thought I was better than somebody and they weren't acting accordingly to that, like, it was really rude. I had a lot of expectations on people that I didn't know that I had expectations. I didn't really understand expectations until I came into AA. And I just saw a pattern in my life that, like, any resentment that I've had, any bad feeling I've had towards somebody is because of these certain things. Like, if somebody made me feel less than, or they threatened an idea that I had, like I wanted it to go this way and they disrupted the way that I wanted it to go, resentment. It was all a lack of truly understanding the expectations I had on other people. It was lacking grace, understanding. It was lacking humbleness. It was lacking, like, letting go. It was all control and it was all manipulation and it was all pride and ego. Like I said, it was big for me. And you know, I finally saw those things in myself, right? So now I can pray for my defects to be removed. And, you know, we try to change ourselves, right? We try all the time, but God is ultimately the one that we have to invite in. And I remember it feeling really simple to just, like, pray for my defects. I was like, you have to, like, got to do something. But prayer is what gives us the ability to... You give those things over to God, and then He gives somehow, don't ask me now, gives you chances to respond in a different way than you did before. You know, so that those defects, and you can kind of, they're always going to be there, but He gives you opportunities to act in a different way, right? To respond in a different way, to be a different person, and that's my experience with that. And then when I did my, I don't know what time do I have? All right. My 9th step, I remember when I first walked into the rooms, I remember listening to people talk about their 9th step, making amends to people. Not really one to, like, felt like that was groveling, right? Ugh. that hits the ego, that hits the pride, you know, to have to apologize or make an amends for how you've been and make a promise to be different or make up for it, right? And I remember hearing people talk about that one person that I'll never, you know, when I first came in, I said I would never make an amends to this person, and I did, and it gave me such freedom. And I remember being like strongest eye roll, are you kidding? I will never make an amends to my father. He's the reason for this. And I, like, hands crossed, like, never doing that. Don't ask me to do it. Silly for me to sit there and say that, because who's it hurting? It's hurting me. I'm sitting here hating my father for, and it's doing what for me? It's doing nothing for me. But it wasn't until that second time of going through the amends and really being miserable, actually, that, like, my sponsor was like, well, how free do you want to be, really? You know, like, you're only going to be as free as you're willing to be. And I remember being like, I just need to not be miserable. I just need to not be miserable. And at that point, like I said, I had done these base level, like, amends. And I finally, second time around, was like, I want to be willing to make amends to my father. I want to see, you know, I want to make an amends to him. You know, I want to see where my side of it was. And I remember praying for the willingness to have that. And I did. I finally saw, like, I grew up thinking my dad was like the enemy. You know, he, you know, was so hard on me. And, like, he always expects this out of me. And, you know, at the same time, like, he doesn't love me. He's so hard on me. Like, why does he treat me this way? Like, so, you know, I'm free from it now, so it's kind of hard to see how I was then, but I hated being around my dad. I hated him. His laugh made me, oh my God, it was hard and just, yeah, I was miserable. And I finally saw that, like, I really made it impossible for my dad to get close to me. So, like, I would be upset that he wasn't loving me, but at the same time, I was like, never giving him an opportunity to, making it really hard. And I don't think I actually really understood that until I had people in my life where the similar situations were happening. I was like, this is how it feels, I guess, right? And I saw that, like, my dad just wanted to love me, and I was his daughter, and I just was like, I was spewing hate at him. And I was just constantly hurting my dad, you know? And I just saw that there was, like, a mutual, just, we were both hurting, and my dad was just trying to do the best that he could, you know, and I was like, he should be doing better, right? Like, I had these crazy expectations for my father, and that just wasn't where he was at, and I was hating him for it. And I remember sitting down and genuinely making an amends to my dad without wanting him to say sorry to me. Like, I had always been like, he needs to say sorry to me, and he needs to apologize for not being a father, and I had to be the parent in this relationship, and yada, yada, yada. And I finally was just like, along the lines of, like, I'm sorry that, like, I never gave you the opportunity to love me, and that I know that you were doing the best that you could, and that, you know, I'm sorry that I remember having written down, because it was a little hard to, like, put it into words for myself, but that I had these expectations of you that were unfair, essentially, right? Like, I had these crazy expectations of you and these levels for you to meet that you had no idea about. But when you didn't meet them, I just, like, spewed hate at you. And, you know, for the longest time, I never thought that I would dance with my father at my wedding. This is, I'm telling you 100% truth. Like, I didn't want him near me. Don't touch me. Get away. Like, as he was in the room, I wanted to leave. Like, go away. And I remember being, before I made this amends, like, if I get married, like, we're not having a daddy-daughter dance. Like, you're out of your mind. Don't touch me. I don't want you even walking me down the aisle. I'm fine. Like, truly. And I didn't think I would ever really be able to have conversations with my dad or sit down and have a loving, like, feeling toward my dad or want to hug him and care about him. And today I do. And that, it's hard for me to, I've always been bad with words. I really am bad with stuff like this. So I'm sorry. But, like, the depth of how much that consumed me, my relationship with my father, it was like this gray cloud over my life. And then when I got sober, it was still there. And when I made that amends, it was like, I don't know. It was like freedom. It really was like a level of freedom where like I could be and let him be. I could live and let him live. And there was a level of acceptance and ceasing to try to control and realizing the expectations that I had on my father and that were unfair. And this is like the beauty of the program, right? Like, had I not come to this program, I would not be connected to God. I would not see myself for who I truly was, to be able to be who God wanted me to be eventually, to make these amends and grow closer to people that I never thought I would. Like, I truly thought I had my whole life pictured, like, without my dad. Like, I had, and what AA has brought me is, like, a whole life that I never knew I could have. Truly. I mean that with my whole heart. Like, it sounds cliche, that's what I struggle with. I struggle with saying cliche things because I want it to hit to the heart, like, how real it is for me. Like, this is real. Like, I don't know. Like I said, I'm terrible with words, but you know, I still, moving on to the other steps, I still struggle with 10 and 11, taking a daily inventory. I always have been. That's something I struggle with, having more time. I can get sick sober. I can get miserable, unmanageable, resentful, controlling sober. And I know it, and I know what I'm missing now, right? Like, that's another thing about this program. Once you've been through it and you know what it's like to be with serenity and peace, you know when you're out of it, and you know how to get back. But it doesn't make it any easier. I have honestly been struggling with that lately, which kind of made me feel like I was unqualified to speak, but I know this program is the solution, and God is the solution, and the program brings me to God, and I know what my problem is just, am I willing to do the work? That's a lot of it, actually. It's a lot of AA. Is like, are you willing to do the work that we have set out? Are you willing to do the thing that's going to give you a different life? Are you willing to do the different thing? It's not easy, but you know, I can tell you when you do it, your life is that much better. You know, to move on to 12, I have taken women through the steps. I can say that it's been a while. I really do need to be sponsoring women and be in service more. I'm ratting myself out here. But I know that when I walk through these steps with women in my life and I see them experience what I did, it is like, it's just that more a testament to the program and what it does. You know, like when I take a girl through the steps and she sees God show up in her life and she's excited to tell me about it, or, you know, we go through the fourth step and she's like, oh my God, I never realized that. And then she makes an amends and she tells me about the experience that she had making an amends. You know, like, you see God work through their life, and then that rejuvenates you, because we're not always, you know, like I just said, like, I struggle. We struggle in sobriety. We are humans. It's an everyday program, right? Like, they say that. You can't just do it one time and then expect to be good, and I know that. I guess, like, it's pretty easy to get out of the groove, and I guess to tell you a little bit about what my life is like today, just to tell you what sobriety brings me personally. Before I got sober, I was living paycheck to paycheck. My money went wherever I wanted it to go. My parents, it's funny, actually, I thought I was so good with money. My parents were like, you were horrible with money. That's news to me. Like a few months ago, I went up till a few months ago thinking that I was so great with money before sobriety. And my parents were like, you were so horrible with money. You never had money. And I was like, I thought I did. It's a delusion. I was delusional. And there's a lot of things that, like, it's crazy. Like, I lived blind. It was, and you don't know until you look back, and, like, people who weren't, you know, intoxicated during that time are like, this is what it was really actually like. And you're like, no way. That's crazy. Anywho, I have a family. I got married. Like I said, I danced with my dad at my wedding. Never thought that would happen. I've done traveling. I look back at my, like, this is silly, but whatever. And, like, my Facebook memories. And, like, 10 years ago, I put that, like, I just wanted to travel. That's all I wanted to do. I just want to travel. I want to see the world. And I do now. You know, like, I've seen most of the national parks. You know, I just went to Costa Rica. We went to Florida. Like, we've gone to Utah, California, Montana, Wyoming. We've gone everywhere. Like, I could have never imagined that for myself. I'm living my wildest dream. You know, and, you know, I have relationships with both my parents now and my brother. I tortured my brother. I tortured my friends. I can be reliable now. Like, I always was a flake. Like, people can rely on me. Like, I show up. And it sucks because this is said a lot. Only because, honestly, it's said a lot because it's the truth of what you get in this program. But it's true. Like, I can show up for people and they can rely on me. When I was drinking, nobody asked me for anything because I wouldn't do it, or I couldn't, like I said, like I would, I'll be designated driver. Nobody could rely on me to be a designated driver, even though I said it, and I never could follow through with it. Now what I say, I mean, and I do. You know, I have a daughter that, like, I think about if I had a daughter while I was drinking, I don't know, it's hard. It's hard being a mom. Like, I can be present with her. I can know the good things to do for her. Like, I could barely take care of myself when I was drinking, you know? Like, honestly, we have, like, financial freedom. I sometimes still live in a state of, like, mindset of, like, living paycheck to paycheck because I didn't expect this for myself. Let's just say, like, a common theme that I see in a lot of, like, our alcoholics' lives is, like, we never expected to get this far. And so we're grateful for where we're at. Like, I never expected to live this long, if I'm being completely honest with you. I never expected to get this far or to be this happy or to get married or have a kid or have a house and not worry about money. Like, I was fully anticipating struggling my entire life. I was fully prepared to struggle my entire life in all these areas, and I don't. And I have peace, and I know where to get peace, and I have friends, like, that show up. Like, I've had several people pass away in the last 2 years, and it is hard. And people show up, even though it's hard for them too. And I have friends who get me like nobody else gets me, and friends who keep me accountable. Like, other friends never kept me accountable when I was drinking. Like, we were all just doing our thing. Like, I have friends who, you know, can tell me when I'm not acting spiritual, you know, and I don't know. I just have a full life, and I can look at life from a perspective of, like, what am I grateful for today instead of what don't I have? I was stuck in that mindset. What don't I have? And I'm the victim. Da, 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 da. I have a different perspective, and I have a choice now, you know, like, I don't have to drink, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. Like, that was like a task. Whew. Trying to avoid drinking, you know, like, I have that freedom now. Like, I never thought I would. And I don't want to take any more time, I don't think. Yeah. I think that's all I have. And thank you guys for letting me speak.
The group would like to thank Chelsea again for sharing her experience with us tonight. The group would also like to remind anyone in need of a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. When anybody who has working knowledge of the 12 steps, please raise your hand. Thank you, guys. Please help us close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. You gonna take us out, Chelsea?
Followed by Lord's Prayer.
Which is our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. Click the pause for you on this.
You gotta hit the...